What's up, world? It's your boy P. Frank Williams, producer, extraordinaire, BET Awards, American Gangster, Unsung, plenty of properties. I want to shout out my man LT and Jack for holding it down.
You are listening to the LC and Jack Radio Show, live from New York. And now, here are your hosts, LC and Jack.
Welcome to the LC and Jack Radio Show with your man LC holding it down. Give us a shout here in the studio. You can reach us live at area code 347-843-4738. The LC and Jack Radio Show with my man Brett. What's the word there, Brett?
All right, man. Hey, 90 days and counting. All right. 90 days and counting. That's my word for the day.
That was good.
All right.
And we want to dedicate this show to the wonderful soulstress, Miss Donna Summers.
Yes, sir.
I tell you, Brad, what a blow it is. But our hearts and prayers goes out to her family.
True indeed.
All right there, Brad. Let's move on with our guest this evening, P. Frank Williams. An Emmy and NAACP Image Award winner, is a TV, film, writer, author, and commentator. Some of the shows he's produced are the BET Awards, NAACP Image Awards, the BET Honors, and the 2004 Olympic Games, to name a few. Recently, he has produced BET's America Gangster, Sunday's Best, and TV's One's Unsung series. If you haven't seen it, you got to check it out. We are so pleased to welcome to the LC and Jack Radio Show, Mr. P. Frank Williams.
And I'm happy to be here with you guys. Good luck and for bringing me on, man. I really appreciate it. And so thanks for having
appreciate
me.
Appreciate you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
We appreciate you taking a little time out of your busy schedule. We know how it is. So
what's the weather like in New York City there today? Is it?
Yo, it's like the West Coast over here. You know what I'm saying? We're toasting eggs on the sidewalk.
Okay, good. Right. You got your rags and your lowrider and everything. Okay,
nah, we don't do that, man. We're too many potholes.
Oh, okay.
You know, we got potholes over here. We'll bottom out and break your axles.
Exactly. I feel you.
But we're going to jump into it, P. Frank. Want to get at you and find out what was so attractive about journalism. Why'd you get into that?
Well, I don't know where you guys are from in New York City, but I'm from East Oakland. And when I was a kid, like in the 70s, around me was a lot of like Black Panthers and hippies. And like these are people that I would see growing up. And my uncle was a really well-known kind of like writer, like activist dude in the Bay Area, and so even as a shorty, I was into kind of like learning about and reading and just newspapers and stuff like that, and I would read the sports page, and by the time I was maybe like around 9 or 10, some of the young homies in the hood, they basically wanted to communicate with their girlfriends, and some of them weren't the best letter writers, and so I started writing letters for some of the homies in the hood, like say your girlfriend Jackie, you wanted to express how you feel, you really couldn't get it together, and I'd write you that little solid love letter and get a little a little 10 spot from you, 5 spot, and make it happen. And so since then I've been a writer, and I was always fascinated by words, and I would watch television and read the newspaper. So it started early with me, man, and by the time I was in high school, I was working on my high school newspaper. And then in college, I also, starting with sports, I'm a big sports person. So and in college, I also wrote on my college paper and editorial. And by the time I got to college, I was writing for my paper, and then I got an internship at Newsday, where I worked in New York City when I was at mm-hmm. Columbia. And once I graduated from Columbia out there in New York City, I worked at LA Times. So as you can see, it's just a natural progression from a LA Times writer to the editor, executive editor of the Source magazine, and I worked at the Source. So I've always been into journalism and writing and communications, you know?
Well, that's what's good.
Wow.
You're doing your thing, and
that was my escape from the hood. You know what I mean? Everybody has mm-hmm. basketball, whatever you might be doing, but that was my escape route, getting out of my environment.
What's your team, by the way? I know you're from the Bay Area. What's your team?
Is the Raider Nation. You know what I mean? In terms
uh-oh.
Of any sport, yeah, that's Raider Nation all day, and we can take it outside. But I'm also, my team is the Jets and the Knicks. I lived in New York City for a long time. You know what I mean? And I'm a Lakers supporter. Can't say I'm a fan. I moved here, so I'm still in the Lakers. You know what I'm saying? I hate the Patriots. We can't really talk about that. And the Celtics. I'm a black nationalist. I'm with all of the pro black teams.
Yes,
I'm
sir.
Not with none
yes,
of the
sir.
Patriots,
yes,
Celtics,
sir.
None of that. So I'm a hater.
That's what's good. Well, I'm with you with the Knicks, but I'm a Cowboy fan here.
Oh, wow.
I love
the Cowboys. Yeah, Cowboys cool. Mm.
That's what's good. That's what's good.
I'm about to ram you over there. I'm a Rams fan. Do or die.
Okay, you don't really have much. You did win a championship,
yeah.
So you can't.
Yeah, yeah, I snuck one in. You know what I'm saying? 99, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
But you had mentioned, P. Frank, the Source, and I just want to touch briefly on that because I want to hit so many different things in the time that we have with you. But I know you did several interviews with various artists at that time. Is that one briefly that you can touch on that you'd be like, wow, you know, most people would be shocked to find out information on that artist?
Well, you know, when I was at the Source in the late, in the mid-90s to late 90s, early 2000s or so, I wrote quite a few cover articles at the Source, whether it be Ghetto Boys, whether it be Dr. Dre. I wrote the memorial cover for Eazy-E when he died back in 95,
mm-hmm.
so that makes a real, I guess I'd show how old I am. But I also wrote the Tupac cover. When Tupac died, I was in Vegas the day after he got shot, and I covered that for the Source as well as the LA Times. But, you know, a lot of people in terms of the Source history know me from the Suge Knight interviews that I did, and
mm-hmm.
I interviewed Suge, obviously, when Death Row was at its height, as well as when it was falling, when Dr. Dre left. So, you know, Suge was a wild boy. You know, he would just kind of say crazy stuff. You know, I went into his office one time at Death Row Records when they were on Wilshire Boulevard, and he had just gotten out of jail. And he was sipping on some Diet Coke. He had his little jeans and his, you know, diamond-studded handcuffs. And so he opens up the briefcase in his office, and right behind him is a huge shark tank with barracudas in there. And he
wow.
liked to drop fish and stuff like that in there and blood red carpet. And so he was like, you know, pulled out the diamond-studded handcuffs. Like, these, you know, I'm not going to say what he said, but they basically can't hold me down anymore. So, you know, I'm a free out of jail with my diamond handcuffs. And he went off on Prince, calling Prince a homosexual, calling Magic Johnson a homosexual, talking about Mr. Farrakhan, obviously going in on Dr. Dre, Biggie. You know, it was just a wild time in hip-hop. And so writing some of those articles at the height of the Bad Boy era, you know, Death Row Beef, you know, Vibe versus Source, it just was a wild time in the whole industry. You know, it was late 90s, Rockefeller, Aftermath, you know, Rough Riders, that whole movement.
Mm-hmm.
Out the big time, we was wilding out Murder, Inc., you know, so those are
yeah.
some of the things that I did, obviously, at the Source. It was a lot of fun, man. It was a rolling stone of hip-hop, I guess you could say.
Yes, sir. No doubt about it. And to me, you know, I'm an older head here. That was real hip-hop, in my opinion. I know it is, you know, it's changed and evolved, but not the violent piece, but just the music and, you know, Eazy-E, some of the artists that you mentioned, you know, wow. That's you know, sum it up to me, just what they
yeah no it was a different time. Yeah, I mean, and it's funny because people always ask me what I think of hip hop now, and I still feel like it's probably one of the most beautiful times ever in the history of the art form. And I'm a cat who used to record it off the radio in '82
mm-hmm.
when it was 1 hour on a Sunday, and when you go to the record store and there was like, you know, 8 or 9 CDs that you could buy, not a DVD or nothing like that. But so I understand how far we progressed, and I'm glad to see the Tigers and the Lil Wayne's and the Bruno Mars kind of blending with hip-hop, and, you know, the B.O.B.'s and the kids with their jeggings and skateboards. You know, before when we were young, we got stereotyped for wearing baggy clothes and nobody would play hip-hop on the radio. And we were like the outsiders, you know what I mean?
That's
that
right.
First,
yep.
Well, because I guess I'm kind of like second-generation hip-hop. And now to see it mainstream, some people may be mad that hip-hop has been co-opted and become a multi-million-dollar industry, billion-dollar industry. But I'm happy. I think it's good. And my kids don't have to worry about stereotypes. They grew up with hip-hop on the radio. They don't know what that means, you know?
No, definitely. I feel, and there are some artists I can get to today. It's just, like you said, it's changed. And I still like the Jay-Z's, and there's still some I call throwback. But they really give you a show, you know, so, but great. And I just want to kind of shoot, because I know you've done a lot, my brother. You've done some really great things.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I've been working hard. My grandmother had that belt out when I was a shorty. You know what I'm saying? So that's exactly. You want to know why I was in school? Why wasn't I smoking L's and why I had to keep working? I'm a different age now, but I'm still afraid of that belt.
Yeah, and that rolling pin. Watch out for that rolling pin.
she used quite a different kind of thing. So that's why you see me out there grinding like it was 86 and I'm out the trunk.
Wow. Right. And I guess just kind of jumping in, and you've done, like you said, grinding, doing a lot of these award shows. What does it take to get those things to come off? You know, you're intricately involved, dealing with artists, personalities. How difficult is that to make that?
Are you talking about award shows in terms of making them happen and stuff like
yes.
that?
Yes, yes.
Well, I mean, earlier in the day, you know, like the 99, 2000, when I did the Source Awards or the Vibe Awards earlier and back in the day, you know, hip-hop wasn't as much getting props from the Grammys and mainstream and American Music Awards and Billboard. And so back then, it was an easier thing to get your hip-hop, your Jay-Z's and, you know, your DMX and Busta Rhymes on those shows. Because that was all they had to get honored. You know, a mainstream show like the BET Awards, a lot of time, the labels, at least they used to, pay for their sets or want them to be on that show because it's very visible. It's free publicity to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
Or almost like a commercial. But, you know, a lot of times I would do the special packages on BET Awards or BET Honors. So if you saw Russell Simmons getting awarded something on the BET Hip Hop, I would go out and interview Russell, put it together, you know, produce it, or BET Honors where I wrote the script and produce all the special packages. So award shows are, you know, can be both good and bad. You know, you got artists are just like your girlfriend. It's temperamental, you know what I mean? She might be having a monthly situation a day, or might be having a issue with her or her family, or she just wants to cry. So, you know, people ask me as a producer, whether it be award shows or Young Jeezy movie or whatever I'm doing, or digital, it doesn't matter. You know, artists are like your kids, you know what I mean? And they are the worst kind of kids sometimes because they're so used to getting everything their way, kissing their ass, and you basically got to massage them. You know, Unsung, I deal with a lot of different issues in terms of artist insecurity, artist drug habits, artist quirks, artist wanting a certain amount of money, artist not being on time. So, but when it comes to the end of it, when they get to see themselves on television or back in the day in a magazine, usually they're very happy. Very rarely have I had anybody have any beef, so... Award shows are fun, man, and I think that for most people it's really a celebration. And it's not nothing too heavy. I'm not trying to accuse you of a murder like Suge Knight, or I'm not trying to fry you like an American Gangster. So,
right,
you know, be positive, you know.
And that's what's good. And you mentioned Unsung. It's a great kind of segue. I tell you, my brother, I've been watching these things, and the way it's crafted, well, very well written. It hits you. It keeps you moving throughout. I mean. Yeah, I'm mad at the end because I'm like, wow, it's over already? You know,
right.
So that's when you know, at least me, I'm watching a show. I'm mad at the end, not because, you know, the show itself, just like, you know, it's just flowed and it's been informative.
Right.
I mean, one of the Unsungs that you did, I mean, it's been so many. We could go on and on, but Sheila E., it's one of those artists, I'm like, you know, what happened, you know, kind of behind the scenes? Stacey Lattishaw, what happened to her? You know, you never...
Well, I mean, Sheila E., obviously, that was a really great chance to do that. And the only reason that actually happened, because I am from Oakland, and she is from the same neighborhood. As you saw, she was in Oakland, and I was able to communicate with her. And she was a little bit worried, you know, that sometimes Unsung portrays you as, like, old school or one foot in the grave, as if you're played out. And
that's
she's very much alive and very much doing her thing, you know, television and Oscars and, you know, the Grammys. So she's not like she fell off, you know what I mean? And so for me, doing a show like that is basically an extension of what I did in the magazine. So if I profile Suge or EPMD or Mobb Deep or whoever it may be, Wyclef in a magazine, I took that and I put it in a visual form on Unsung. And as a fan of the culture, whether it be, you know, black music, soul, R&B, hip-hop, whatever it is, I try to take a picture of that person's life And it's basically, imagine me taking a snapshot of your life, and then I basically show that back to the public and be like, well, this is what I saw. And
I don't know if
you want to
do that, my brother.
No, we want to show all your good and bad. We want to show that night you was passed out, you know what I'm saying, on the L train, trying to get back, you know what I mean? Or that big girl that you, after three shots,
oh,
you hit it, and you was like,
man.
Well, I know it's only 250. I could work it, you know what I'm saying?
I know that's
weird.
You
know,
good,
those judgment calls. I want to show the whole thing. You know what I mean?
Wow.
And people love Unsung because a lot of times, you know, black artists, especially rock, you know, R&B, soul, hip hop, early days, haven't gotten the props they would. They're never going to get it behind the music. So
right.
Here is a chance and a vehicle for them to get the props and get honored that, you know, we know as music fans, because they have great stories. Nobody is just telling them. And so I think that's why Unsung has been on for 5 seasons. You know what I mean? Whether it be Houdini, I did, or Big Daddy Kane, or Zap, or whoever, Full Force, it doesn't really matter. You know, Arrested Development, which I just did, which is coming out in a couple of months. So I'm happy to produce the series, man, and I think it's a great thing. We won another NAACP Image Award this year.
Congratulations.
So,
yes,
it's a good thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Congratulations.
I'm, you know,
I mean,
paying some bills with that. That's a Cardinal situation.
Hey,
I'm very happy about that.
That's what's good. How did you get involved with Unsung?
You know, I've been working on BET, at BET, where I've done, like, you know, BET Awards and all these kind of shows, Hip Hop versus America, all the specials about Tupac and James Brown, all those kind of things. And when I was working at the network, I produced a show on BET called American Gangster. And
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people know I did, like, you know, Monster Cody and Atul Shakur and Felix Mitchell, all these different folks. And the same company that produced this American Gangster is the producers of Unsung. So basically, you know, I was like, well, hey, here's some artists that I want to do. And they were like, well, we know you're a good producer and you do your thing and go out and make it happen. So I posted the Zap Family and, you know, the Troutmans and, you know, whether it be Sheila. I just try to use my extension of what I did in the music business and just keep going from that. So I always say to people ask me all the time, well, how do you get in the game, or, well, how do you get interviews with people? First, you know, to get interviews with people, I have those same relationships that I have from working at The Source and the LA Times, and I always stay in contact with people and I always do a good job. So, you
right.
know, when I popped up on Grandmaster Flash to work up with him, or when I saw Kane, I knew Kane. And Kane was like, Barry didn't want to do it in terms of Unsung, but I convinced him. I was like, I'm not going to play you. I promise you it's going to be a good thing, and
right.
I'll let you check it out before I put it on and make sure you know. But I'm like, you're going to have to give up some of the secrets. I'm going to not know about the 12 girls in one night in Cleveland. You know what I mean? About the beef with Juice Crew. I'm going to have to know about, you know, with Rakim. So, you know, as long as you make artists feel comfortable and you tell their truth, usually they're pretty cool, especially with Unsung.
Yeah. Yeah, especially hip-hop.
Yeah.
You know how hip-hop guys are. You know, it's all about that image, that hard image, and they don't want to have anything come out seeing it, you know, they soft. So,
but, you know, I think that you know, I tell artists all the time that the public identifies with your struggles. They have used drugs. They've had a bad marriage. They went through a depression. They went through the point in their life when they weren't balling as hard. They went through insecurity. So a lot of times you as an artist, you'll be afraid to show, you know, your insecurities, or a Big Daddy Kane when your career was on a lower thing and you didn't know what to do. You know what I mean? Or I just did a Arrested Development speech in the Tennessee Cats. And, you know, when Arrested Development was on a decline, speech thought about suicide. Went through a depression. And I think when people watch it and see where he's at in his life now and how he's turned it around, they're going to be able to embrace that story and identify with it. So I always tell people, don't be afraid to show your scars. That's life. Those scars, you got those by putting in work.
Yes,
so,
sir.
You know, I encourage folks to embrace, you know, your scar, because it's a beautiful thing.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Mr. P. Frank Williams, who's a very notable TV film writer, producer. The list goes on and on. So a pleasure. You know, we're so happy to have him with us for a few more minutes. P. Frank, what's a day in the life? I know you touched a little bit earlier in the interview. What's a day in the life like, even today?
Well, I mean, just I guess this week I have a piece in development. You know, what I'm doing with allhiphop.com and potentially with Complex. I'm still in the early stages, but it looks like it's going to work out. Where we have a piece that we're doing, the first original online series, Imagine Unsung, and you know, but a short form videos, you know, portraying the pivotal moments in hip hop. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine like 30 for 30 online. So I'm in the midst of producing that. series, which is probably going to launch at the end of the year, and I'm in pre-production, which means I'm getting the contracts, having the meetings. I just did a film called American Hope, Madam's Heaven and Hell. It's a documentary about a woman who's like the new school Heidi Fleiss and has these escort services in different cities. And so I'm in the point where we are finishing the rough cut. I'm in the edit bay, and I'm putting VOs on it, and I'm cutting it down. I'm also about to start working on another project with Fuse, so I'm just talking through the ideas of that. And, you know, I just left the road. I was on the road for about 2 weeks where I was shooting in Atlanta, and then I went to New York. I was there having some meetings, and so I move around. You know what I mean? I shoot for a few weeks, go back to the edit bay, get it right, have meetings about the next project, and you know what I mean? I brainstorm, sent a bunch of emails. So I'm always like, I'm in the lab. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm like, I'm making an album. You know, you got to write the lyrics. You got to hear some of the beats. I got to make 40 songs. I'm only going to take 15. You know, a lot of what I do is filming stuff and putting it together. And what you see on a 45 minutes of episode or 42 minutes of Unsung, I might have about 1,000 hours of footage and I had to put it down to 42 minutes. So somebody has to do that. So that's kind of that, you know, and trying to be in the scene a little bit and check out events and make sure I stay in the know and, you know, watch a lot of television and film. And, you know, I'm always kind of creating and crafting. So, you know, I'm hustling. Like I say, I always compare it back to 86 when I didn't have nothing. I know what it was like to be out of my trunk trying to sell DVDs and stand outside the grocery stores trying to, like, get people to carry their groceries, you know, to get, like, 40, 50 bucks a day. So I treat it like Biggie say. Treat it like you as an intern, like your first day.
That's right. And people, I'm sure, can recognize that. Was there a role model or a mentor, someone that you looked at, whether it be when you were younger or when you decided that, you know, you want to get into this business, that kind of guided you?
Well, there's different ones. I mean, from a straight family level, my grandmother was my big inspiration. She came from the Deep South, and her working hard in her life gave me an opportunity to have a better education, to do things. You know, when I was young, it was obviously a lot of street hustlers, and for me, Black Panthers, those are some of my early inspirations. I had a high school counselor who saved my life because I was a troubled youth and a runaway. I nearly went a different way. So he saved my life in that way. In terms of the music industry and the television industry, I've worked with Suzanne DePass, who's a really fantastic producer of Motown 25, and producing Showtime Apollo, which I worked on. And, you know, Nelson George is like my OG brother who helped me get hooked up at BET and who put me on at American Gangster. And now I'm working with Reggie Hudlin, who was a, you know, president of BET, and we're working together on a few things. So I just, you know, I continue to be inspired, and I was inspired by James Baldwin, you know what I mean, in terms of what he's done with his life in terms of as a writer. When I was a writer, you know, Jay-Z, in terms of, I don't really know him that well, but I have met him and chatted with him, and he's a hell of an inspiration in terms of how he's branded hip-hop, you know. I'm a producer, writer, I do online, all that kind of stuff. I feel like, you know, people like Jay inspire me to show that you can do anything with your vision. You know, I never thought I would be, you know, producing the Olympics, you're dealing with Bob Costas, or I never thought I would be backstage with Diane Carroll and Sidney Poitier, but I just was like, I can do it. So, you know, I try to just multitask, brother, and be inspired by all kind of people. You know what I mean? I was inspired. One time I was backstage at the NAACP Image Awards, and I was a writer and producer on that show for many years. And a show like that, I would write the copy that the people say, you know, welcome to the Image Awards. And, you know, I would write everything that they say on stage as well as produce the packages that you see. And Sidney Poitier was going to give an award that night. And a lot of times artists are difficult with what you write. They don't want to do it. They don't like the skit. They want to change it around. They don't know what they want to say.
Right.
Still, they want to tell you what yours isn't good. And so they want to be very difficult. And so Sidney Poitier, you know, it's a legend, an icon in the game. And you think Lil Wayne or hip-hop, that ain't nothing to what this man did for us as the people in terms of, you know, Oscars and first black man to do a lot of things. And so I'm on the phone with the dude, and I'm like, you know, I done been with Bill Clinton and Tupac and Biggie and Suge Knight, and you can name it, Diddy, Bono. And I was a little bit shook. I was like, oh, shit, you know, it's a legend. And so I'm like, sir, you know, I wrote this stuff. And he's like, well, it sounds pretty good, young man, but, you know, I really feel like there's something else that we could say. You know, he was telling me about different ideas that he had. And he was like, well, I just want to come over there myself and read it and work on it. And I was like, what? Like, Sidney Poitier, where it's artist, you got four handlers and three people trying to tell you what to do, and they got a person sitting next to a person. And so he's like, well, I'm going to come over there to the venue. And I was like, what? And I was like, well, yeah, we'll send a car. And he was like, no, I'll drive myself. And I was like, oh, shit. And so Sidney Poitier, older man, probably was 80-something at this point, drove his self down to the Shrine Auditorium, sat there and, you know, came through. And he asked me a question that changed my life. And he was like, well, what do you think? And I was like, well, Sidney Poitier just asked me, what do I think?
Wow.
I was like, oh, man. And so we went through the copy, and it was a great time. And I just was really an honor to be able to sit down with somebody who was so down to earth and great. You know, some of the bigger legends that I've interviewed have been way more difficult, and drama, and cursing me out, and just wildness. And it was a really great time to talk to a legend, and that's why he's a legend, because
right.
he was a humble man, and he was down to earth, and he's still, after Oscars and being all out there as an icon, still was a down to earth individual. And it taught me a lesson about humility and treating everybody the same. Because I was just this little kid working on a show, and this icon took out of his day to say, hey, young man, what do you think? And honor my opinion. So it was just a really great honor.
Well, and we know you have to run, but we got a couple quick hits for you. Donna Summer, the passing of Donna Summer. Any thoughts?
Well, just, I mean, she's an icon of the disco era and of soul music, and I think that she was just a classy lady that, you know, she was able to have a hell of a career even after her kind of, quote, era ran over, you know what I mean? And that's a sign of a great artist, you know. People always ask me about success, and I say, I'd rather be Tina Reeve. I'd rather have, like, 4 or 5 gold albums and be able to tour and write and stay in the studio for 25 years. And
that's
Donna Summer's life is that, a life of consistency and greatness and class. And you got to appreciate folks while they're here. You know, I had been reaching out to Heavy D right before the brother passed away, and I was a big follower of him and a fan, and I was trying to get an unsung on him, and it didn't happen, but I wish I would have been able to do that interview with him. So you got to honor folks while they're here, you know what I mean? And I'm glad Donna got to get some love while she was around, because you never know when you're going to check out.
That's right. And Whitney Houston, any thoughts about Whitney?
Oh, man, I mean, that sister was one of the most down-to-earth, funny people that you'll ever meet. You can Google it, but I produced a piece about Whitney Houston that ran on the BET Honors, I want to say it was 2010.
Right.
I interviewed her, ironically, at the same hotel she died, a few floors above the floor she died on. And Whitney, you know, we all have our demons and our troubles, you know what I mean? And who teaches you how to, it's like parenting. Do people give you a guidebook? You can get some book and read it, but nobody teaches you how to deal with fame. And
right.
so when you become that type of a global superstar, we deal with it in different ways. And Whitney came into the hotel, and, you know, sometimes when I deal with celebrities, I had to have an extra room on the side at the Beverly Hilton, a suite, and nobody could have been in, and nobody touched, that she can come in, do her makeup, and her people can come in and hang out, and nobody can bother her. So I had this really huge suite. She came in. I had to order some food trays and some little stuff for her and make sure there was not too many people in the room, and got the special lighting she wanted, and she came in cracking jokes and having a good time, and just was upbeat in her spirit. She sang for me and told me about her inspirations, and it was just an unbelievable time. And you know, I just was proud to have that moment with her, because you know, I don't know if she was, you know, she came in looking really like she had been having a good time that day, let's just say it that way.
Right.
And,
good.
You know, and that's cool, you know what I mean? And
person.
Who am I to judge anybody in terms of how they deal with their life? But she was fun. We had a great interview. And on the way out, she was like, God is keeping it too hot up in here. And we had the fruit tray and the vegetable tray on the little table there for people to have snacks and do whatever. And she was like, told her assistant, y'all make sure y'all grab that fruit tray. I want my fruit tray for my room. And I was serious with you, still trying to get her fruit tray. After all these millions of records, she come into my interview for a little BET show, trying to get her food today. So, amazing woman, man. She was like Pac, you know. She was, you know, sometimes, I don't know if you see about stars. The stars, they shine in the sky really bright, and some of them fall to earth, and they dim. Some stars will stay forever. I don't know if you know that some of them fall to earth. And she was only being meant to be that lightning in a bottle like Pac for a while. I don't think that she was meant to be here forever. And she gave us a lot of really great music. And as a person who got a chance to interview and meet her, phenomenal, beautiful, funny lady. And I'm glad that she's in a place now that she can be happy and that she can rest. You know what I mean? She needed to rest, I think.
No doubt about it. Quickly, you do. I know you do some community outreach. Anything in particular that you like to our audience?
Well, we do. I've recently started. Last year we did a mentorship for young people of color who are trying to break into the television, the film industry. We do a camp with them, a short one-week camp that we've done at a different small colleges. This summer, I'm doing one in Milwaukee with speech, where I'm taking high school and college students, learning to teach them how to produce. Because a lot of people throw stuff on YouTube, and they don't really know how to go out and interview people and edit it and put it together and tell a story. So that's the big thing that I do. I worked previously with the Big Brothers, but my thing is to try to prepare young people of color to work in the industry. And not everybody got to be on stage. Not everybody has to be Jay or B or Wayne. Like, you can be the producer. You can be the stage manager. You can be the stylist. You could be whoever. I mean, and that's how I've been able to keep it a career, because after a million rappers have gone and came, or, you know, producers or writers, we've been able to stay in the mix. So that's what I do, brother. I try to work in a facility where I should encourage and teach young people of color, especially how to get the real knowledge about the entertainment industry so that they can have a career.
Anything that you got coming out? I know you mentioned some things earlier that you like to plug in the audience, really to hone in. I know you talked a little bit about Arrested Development you're going to have.
Arrested Development, I think it airs August 6th on TV One. Mm-hmm. I got to check the date, the local listing, but that's unsung about Arrested Development, and that's the rise and fall of this group. You know, ironically, you'll see that Speech and Headliner and Ishii and all of those folks that came together in Tennessee and Mr. Window, but ironically, the thing that brought them together, which was Black Pride and helping out the community, ironically, the thing that brought them down was money. You would never think that. So it'll be a really interesting story. I have another piece, like I say, I'm doing called Game Changers with AllHipHop.com. It's an online 30 for 30, basically, for hip-hop video series. And I have the film American Hope, A Madam Heaven and Hell, which is probably going to air on HBO or Showtime in October. That's a little bit more risque, but it's a really great story. And I'm in the works right now on a really great project that's going to be the history of hip-hop from day one, a long series, an 8 or 9 part series that's going to air on a major cable network. So I'm just waiting for the deal to get signed. But, I mean, I'm just trying to continue to move forward as a storyteller. I'm a storyteller. I tell stories, whether it be with a pen, a newspaper, or now a video camera, to tell people's stories. And I want to continue to do that, whether it be about hip-hop, whether it be about pop culture, or whatever that may be, man, and inspire young people from urban environments like myself to realize that your block or your little area code is not all there is. I've been to Africa, Asia, Europe, Olympics, you know, BET Awards, all kinds of stuff that you can imagine, the Grammys, and, you know, I never would have thought that I could do that, but the thing that kept me going was I believed in myself, and don't ever stop believing in yourself. I know it sounds cliche, but just wake up and put one foot in front of the other, man, and keep living your dream.
Yeah, this is good. I know my partner's got a quick one, and we're going to let you run.
Yeah. You know, I'm into names, so my nickname is Cornbread, and there's the history behind that. So I found out you are
Cornbread Earl and me.
Yeah, man, you got to give me a dollar for saying that. You know what I'm saying?
Cornbread Earl and me. I actually like cornbread. I came up in a family. We ate hot water cornbread. So
yes, sir. Right on the stovetop. You know what I'm saying?
So what up?
Yeah, the origin behind your P. Freezy, where'd you get that nickname from?
Well, P. Frank, P. Freezy, you know, and there are other variations in the hood, but P. Frank came from Positive Frank, which is still, you know, one way to get in contact with me. I'm Positive Frank at AOL, Positive Frank at Uglink. Those are my emails. When I was in high school, I was going through like a turbulent time. My mother was on the streets doing too much, and I was a one of those kids that was out there lost, trying to figure it out. And I would still come to school every day, and there was a girl in class. She's like, "You're so positive. You, no matter what, you just stay positive." And so it became kind of a nickname. And then when I got into college, you know, you were trying to be cool. You couldn't be Positive Frank as much. And I became P. Frank. And so P. Frank stands for Positive Frank.
Right.
Now, you ask some of the homies, they might say it might be for other things, you know, the young ladies.
Yeah.
That's it. Past.
It's always an interpretation, believe me. They think my name is about food, like, you know, you're saying cornbread.
And what is cornbread? What is
man, we need another show for that.
Yeah, we got to break bread in New York City, you know what I'm saying? Have a nice little drink.
That's good.
And we pop
that's
it up.
Good. We have to circle up with you.
Yes, sir.
You're out this way. We know your time is tight, but we'd like to thank you so much for, you know, taking a little time out of your day to reach out to the LC and Jack Radio Show listening audience, and we definitely have to get you again.
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. And when my show comes on in August, Rest of Development, I'll come on and show you some of the exclusive stuff, you know what I mean? And when I'm in your city doing a screening or whatever else, we come through and we break bread, man.
All right,
bless you
guys.
Man.
Thanks
and
for coming.
And stay safe, man. Stay in contact.
Right. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
All right, peace.
Well, Brad, I tell you, another great, great, great guest and a brother doing his thing. And
yes, sir.
We appreciate his support and, you know, jumping on the show. So, hold on there, Brad. We're going to get him on here. Well, Brad.
Yes, sir.
Well, unbelievable guest, huh?
Hey, man. I'm telling you, man, that was some informative, real information that we got from P. Freezy. That was just unbelievable interview. I really enjoyed it.
Real talk, too, man.
Mm-hmm. I'm telling you. I mean, he said it all with the Whitney Houston behind the scenes and the icon.
Oh, I tell you, man. You're talking about Donna Summer. I mean, he just real, though. I mean, he...
And what's the other guy's name? We mentioned the Pork and Biz guy. The brother.
What artist you talking about?
The older
Wrestling Development?
No, the older guy he was talking about.
Oh, you talking about our partner in crime there, the out man.
Yeah, please help me out.
Sidney.
Guess who's coming?
Okay.
Yeah, Sidney. He's a
sorry to make you struggle there, man. I came to me and I wanted to see if you were gonna come up with
it. Yeah, man. I was thinking of somebody else, that's why.
Sidney Poitier,
yeah.
Like he said, a legend, Brad.
I was thinking about Danny Glover for some reason, because they're almost in the same realm. You know, he's a little bit older than Danny Glover, but
right.
They're in the same ballpark with doing things in the movie industry. You know, they really did some awesome films, and they're activists in their own right. And, you know, there's somebody, if they ask me what do I think, I would be doing the same thing. Like, what? You asking me?
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? Because you know, my fundraising, you know, job that I have, one of the auctioneers, you know, and they're very well versed and make a lot of money. And one of the auctioneers, you know, asked me about some business venture years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "What do you think? You think we can do something together like that?" And I just looked at him. I'm like, I'm making little cheddar at this time, and here's somebody making money 4 or 5 times more than me asking me about a business venture. And that just really opened my eyes to, you know, he being real with me. And I was like, wow. You know what I'm saying? So he looked at me as being a partner,
mm-hmm.
and wanted my judgment. And I was like, wow, that's something else, you know? I have something that he's interested in on the business aspect, you know? And so I know what Frank P. was talking about when Sidney Poitier asked him that in the same room, for real.
Oh, P. Frank.
Yeah, man.
Yes.
Yeah.
P. Frank is, I tell you, for all our listeners, I mean, he's telling you, success, there's no easy way. You just got to get out there, be confident in your skills, network, and work hard. There's no quick answer or easy way. I think obviously, if you listen to hip hop, you hear that from Jay-Z, how he got started, and you know, it wasn't necessarily everyone's glamorous about how he first got in the game, but bottom line is he hustled. I mean, Biggie Smalls, same thing. So I tell you, Brad, man, it's just great to have a format like this and having you as a partner to, you know, relay this information out to the masses. So I tell you there, Brad, it's been a great ride, man, and I'm looking for us to continue and take this to the next level, baby. Cause
yes, sir. It's coming.
It's coming, baby.
Yeah,
I can
man.
Feel it. I can
mm-hmm.
feel it.
And I can see the lines are blowing up, too, man. The lines is lit up tonight.
That's
you
what's good. That's what's good. So definitely hit us up if you haven't. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're
LinkedIn.
Yeah, baby. We're everywhere. So if you want to hit us with an email, you can. Our email is lcandjack@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts. Let us know, hey, maybe you have somebody for P. Frank. All right, for Unsung. You know, so
yeah, I'm gonna have to get on that show, man. I got something to say. if you wanna find out what cornbread really means, oh, Unsung me, baby. Yo, P. Frank, Unsung me, man.
He said he could hook me up, man. Make me look like $1 million.
I got it. I've been trying to tell this story for a minute because I drop it bits and pieces. I tell different parts of my story, not the whole story, but you know. So that means if you get 100 people together, you got a story. You know what I'm saying? 100 people get together and talk about it. Yo, that's the story right there. You know what I'm saying? Because I dropped everybody just a little bit of the history and the origin of where cornbread came from. You know what I'm saying? It's not necessarily about food, but you know, I do food. But that's at the later stage of my life when the food came in. But the origin is something else.
And that's what's good.
Yes, sir.
Well, you got anything spread before
we
wrap the
show? Yeah, man. I got some listeners out there. I got some birthdays. I just want to drop real quick. You know, last week I still want to give thanks to you for giving my girl Crystal Walker the opportunity to be heard around the world.
It's all good.
You know what I'm saying? And she sends her thanks and blessings. So I want to give a shout out to her down in Florida. And I want to give a big, big special shout out to a new friend of mine on Facebook, Miss Carmen Santiago from the BX. Yo, pretty young lady, man. You know, I told her to listen in tonight, and I'm giving her a big special shout out. And she's going to tell all friends and family to listen in. So, look, Cornbread's got a new friend on Facebook. Her name is Carmen Santiago from the BX. All right?
What up,
Carmen? So, I'm glad you're smiling, baby. All right? I'm going to get up. Another shout out to one of my homegirls down in Seaford, New York, Miss Gwen Miles. Out there on the West Coast, Miss Carmen Jones. Down in Beemore, I got Miss Nisi Johnson. And down in Philly, Miss Selena Sultan. One of my old high school teachers that's coming to the 50th birthday bash down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Mr. John I. Cook. Another White Plains homie, Mr. David Morrison down in the Carolinas. Miss Darlene Rivera, the lady who showed me how to put my face up on the Toshiba Vision down in Times Square. Giving you a big shout out there on Midwest. Mr. Christopher Dallin Rippin, a.k.a. Shock from Soul For Real. Give me a shout out, man. Give me a call, man. I'm trying to get you on this show. You know what I'm saying? What's up?
That's what's good.
Another Facebook friend of mine, Miss Hannah Blinsky in New York City. Want to give her a big shout out. And my friend from VP4, Miss Stephanie Russell. Want to give her a big shout out on the LC and Jack radio show. And a couple of birthdays real quick. Mr. Tor Campbell from White Plains. Adria Wood, my sister. Vincent Leroy Allers. Want to give him a big shout out there in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Miss Sonya Houston, Virginia Lumnick, and Anthony Burgess, one of my Facebook friends. Give you all birthday shout outs on the LC and Jack radio show tonight.
Wow, Brad, I think you covered everything.
Yeah,
for me too, man.
Hey, now it's time to tell him. I told you, Carmen, didn't I tell you? Hey, I cover all bases.
That's just good. Well, again, we thank you, our listener, for all the support and great things that are happening with us, because without you, there would be no us. So, last thoughts from LC is, again, rest in peace to Miss Donna Summers. Until next week.
Yes, sir.
Good night.
Peace.